listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with April Mensch, representative and member of the core planning team for the Nevada Preservation Foundation. Las Vegas is about more than just dazzling lights, casinos, and world-class entertainment. Some iconic homes and venues have played a significant role in shaping Las Vegas, and you can experience them firsthand at the 9th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival coming up. April, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what exactly is the Nevada Preservation Foundation?
So Nevada Preservation, we are actually a statewide nonprofit founded in 2014. And what we work to do is we are dedicated to the preservation and the revitalization of our historic buildings here in Nevada and also our historic neighborhoods as well.
Nice. Okay. So what's the Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival all about?
So it's really fun. We are a 4-day event festival, and we offer all kinds of great events that really celebrate the history of Las Vegas, especially the buildings that have played a significant role in sort of shaping our city as we know it. We have over 40 events scheduled this year, everything from we have neighborhood tours where people can walk through the vintage neighborhoods and learn about the different history and architecture of the neighborhoods. We have fabulous cocktail parties. We have a vintage Vegas home tour, which is where you get to actually go inside of some of the vintage homes that people have sort of brought back to life.
Okay, so the vintage homes that people can go into, are those guided tours or just kind of walk around and do what you want?
So our vintage Vegas home tour is a self-guided tour. It's sort of open house style. We have 10 homes featured on it this year, spanning a pretty wide section of town. And people receive a tour booklet, and it's self-driving. So there is a section of time on the day that the tour is held where the homeowners will hold the houses open, and people can come and view the houses on their own time schedule.
Nice. Okay. Now, you mentioned some of the buildings that have shaped the history of Las Vegas. What are some of those buildings that have been integral to our history and growth?
Well, just looking at Fremont Street, I mean, the city really started down in that area. And some of those old buildings are really important, and they tell an interesting story of the how and why our city is here. I mean, we're a little city in the middle of the desert that should probably never have existed, yet here we are. And, you know, those buildings tell the story of how that all happened.
Nice. Okay. So Fremont Street, what other districts are you targeting as historic neighborhoods that really shaped our history?
So we have a lot of other neighborhoods. Obviously, Fremont Street was the first thing that came to mind, but there's plenty more than that. Some of the residential neighborhoods that we highlight are Paradise Palms, of course. That's probably the most well-known vintage neighborhood here in town. That is a mid-century modern master plan community. Most of the homes are from the 60s. We also highlight Beverly Green, which is over right behind the Stratosphere. That was built sort of more in the early 50s throughout the 60s. We highlight the Scotch 80s, of course, which is another great neighborhood. That was sort of the neighborhood for the up and coming people. At the time, you got a lot of those sprawling old 50s and 60s mansions over there. And this year, we're also highlighting the Arts District. Of course, the Arts District has really popped in the last 10 years or so. And a lot of the buildings in that area actually are quite significant to the growth of the city as well.
Nice. Okay. Now, of course, Las Vegas has a reputation for not always preserving our history. A lot of buildings, especially casinos and resorts, get knocked down and turned into something new. So how do these buildings still exist throughout all that and kind of offer us that taste of history that we wouldn't otherwise get to experience?
Well, there's a couple reasons behind that. I mean, this city is, it's a relatively new city if you think about it. We were established in 1905, so it's only been about 120 years as opposed to more established cities. You know, you look at New York or Boston, and those were really there. They've been there for several hundred years, so they're well into their preservation. With what's gone on with Las Vegas, a lot of the issue is, it's not that we're tearing down our history. I mean, that is somewhat of our reputation. It's just that we haven't allowed the buildings to sort of age past that awkward phase where we sort of appreciate what they are and how they're significant to the city. A lot of the buildings, there's a lot more of the original city that exists, I think, than people are aware of, because the city, it's a city that's still growing. So we're still growing outwards. So as you get to the center of town, sort of in these areas that surround, you know, the Strip and Fremont Street, which is, of course, what most people think of when they think of Las Vegas, a lot of the original stuff is still there. And there is a very renewed interest in people moving into this part of town and revitalizing these areas.
Awesome. Okay. So now, besides the various tours, self-guided tours, where people can go into these historic buildings, what are some of the educational sessions that you have going on?
I'm actually really excited. We have some really fun educational sessions this year. And what's making them really fun is they're not in a classroom setting. They are actually in private residences that are really awesome. So you get to have a peek inside of some cool spots. One of the big ones that we're really excited about, this is our first year venturing into gardening. So we are doing it's called Mid-Century Landscapes, and it's going to be really fun. We're going to go through a couple of different yards and talk about desert landscaping. So we're really excited about that. The other one is we have a sourcing educational piece where people are going to get to, a lot of people dream of having these vintage styled homes. So we have people who are really well versed in having brought their personal home into this absolute masterpiece of a 60s time capsule. And we have a staging educational class as well. There's someone here in town who is absolutely stellar, expert at staging homes to look perfectly photo ready. So they'll be hosting that event at their home, and the home itself is absolutely show-stopping. So people will be able to get a peek inside and take some photos of it as well.
Nice. Okay. Now, you mentioned that it's a 4-day event. So when is it actually taking place?
April 25th through April 28th. So it'll be Thursday through Sunday.
Okay. And then what's happening at the Saturday Night Cocktail Gala?
So the Saturday Night Cocktail Gala is going to be hosted at the Plaza Hotel. The Plaza has been there since 1971. And the Plaza is interesting in that it stands on what was previously the Railroad Depot, which is sort of the crux of where the city began, because we started mostly as a train stop town. But the Plaza has been there since the early 70s. And we're hosting our gala in the Plaza showroom, which has remained the same since 1971. It's absolutely fabulous inside. So we are leaning into the 70s theme of the showroom, and we're hosting a 70s themed gala inside. There will be a variety show. There will be some disco dancing, and we'll be doing some little backstage tours of some sort of hidden gems around the plaza that most people probably miss when they're walking through, and telling some folks the history about that.
Awesome. So with a 70s theme, should people come with their platform boots and bell bottoms?
100%. We will be awarding a best dress award. So absolutely. We really want people to get into dressing up. It's part of the fun.
Awesome. Okay. So it sounds like you've got a lot going on with over 40 events during a 4-day period. So where can people go if they want to learn more, first of all, about the Nevada Preservation Foundation in general, or the 9th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival, and pick up tickets for the event if they want to attend?
So people can visit our website at nevadapreservation.org, or they can also visit us on our social media channels. We are on both Instagram and Facebook under Nevada Preservation as well.
Okay, awesome. So nevadapreservation.org is the website to go to, nevadapreservation.org, or you can find them on social media at Nevada Preservation. And the 9th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival is coming up. That's going to happen from April 25th to 28th. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's a ton of different events, over 40 different events over that 4-day period, including various self-guided tours. We've got educational events. And of course, the Saturday Night Gala, which is 70s themed, taking place in the Plaza showroom at the Plaza Hotel, which, unlike a lot of hotels around town, has been standing since 1971. So That is awesome. And we've been speaking today with April Mensch. She's a representative and member of the core planning team for the Nevada Preservation Foundation. And April, thank you so much for being here and letting us know more about this event. You know, I love talking about the history of this town because it's so fascinating. And as you mentioned, very important to what we have today. So thank you for being here and sharing with us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
The Library of Congress invites you to visit the revamped Veterans History Project website, where firsthand accounts shared by U.S. military veterans are accessible to the public. Performing a search of the collection is easy. First, go to loc.gov/vets. Click Explore the Collections. Scroll down to Search the VHP Collections and click. Make sure you're searching this collection, and with simple keywords, you can find what you're looking for. Visit loc.gov/vets today.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Mel Collegian, Development Manager for Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada. The local nonprofit organization works with schools to inspire and prepare students for success through financial literacy and career readiness. Now, April is Financial Literacy Month, and JA is developing a new inspiration center to help make an even bigger impact in the community. Mel, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for welcoming us to this.
So I gave a brief overview, but for people who aren't familiar, what exactly is Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada?
Junior Achievement is the leading nonprofit for economic education organization for kindergarten to 12th grade. We have over 102 area locations across the United States. We are worldwide. Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada has been in Las Vegas since 1996. And our mission is to empower youth to own their economic success through our three pillars, which is financial literacy, workforce readiness, and entrepreneurship.
Okay. Now, as I mentioned, April is Financial Literacy Month. Now, why is Junior Achievement and its financial literacy programs so important for local students?
You know, since its inception in 2003 through a passage of the United States Senate proclaiming April as Financial Literacy Month, its purpose is to raise awareness of the importance of financial literacy and maintaining smart money habits. And that's exactly what Junior Achievement strives to do for our young people. So many of those that we get in front of may not have that knowledge or information. What we're trying to do is really begin them at a very young age to share with them what it means to be responsible with your finance. Now, we have a number of programs, JA in a Day, which is kindergarten to fifth grade, and that is where we begin the process. Now, we have high school level called personal finance, which also gives the high school students just before they get into the work field, or they might be in the work field already, a little bit of information on consumer protection, savings, checking, investments. And so all these things that we are teaching them, it's really going to help them be successful in life and hopefully protect them as they start making an income.
Okay. Now, I always think financial literacy should be one of the core courses that are already taught in schools. But of course, that's not always the case. So thankfully, we have Junior Achievement to step in and kind of fill that void. But how exactly do you work with the schools and the students to bring it all together and go in and teach the students in their own schools where they are already learning?
You know, we have a relationship with the Clark County School District here. And we are getting into the schools here in Clark County, beginning to teach them these financial literacy. One of the things that the listeners need to know is that our governor of Nevada just signed into law Assembly Bill 274. 274 is now a requirement for high school students to have at least one semester of financial literacy before they graduate. This is very important. One of the things that we are striving to do is to take some of that load off of our school teachers, to be able to use our experience and JA's 107-year experience in these areas of financial literacy. So we're going to be getting into the schools, and it's really going to take an effort by everyone here in our community to really be able to educate our youth about financial literacy, but not just financial literacy. It's about everything. It's about workforce readiness. How do you get a job? How do you dress? How do you write a resume? These are all important aspects for a strong community. And that's what Junior Achievement does.
Okay, awesome. Now, sometimes when we think about financial literacy, we think about things like accounting, we think about math, and those aren't necessarily fun things. So how do you make financial education and career readiness fun and interesting so that the kids actually want to learn about it?
Well, I have to say, my personal experience having taught some of these personal finance classes is really, I share my experience with them. And that's really all our volunteers do as well, because we are a volunteer-led organization. You know, we have a number of volunteers that take time out of their busy schedule to really get in front of these students and really try to make it fun, but also to give them an understanding that it's not always peaches and cream. For me personally, I love to share my failures and successes, and they really begin to understand and get excited about really what it could be like if you manage your money properly and be able to invest for the future. And once that light bulb goes off, it's an amazing sight to see these young people get it and understand that money really is an important aspect of being responsible with it. And that's what we try to teach them.
Awesome. Okay. So tell us more about the Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada Inspiration Center.
Oh, this is a game changer. This is something that's been in the work for many years. It was kind of slowed down due to COVID, but it is about ready to open up and serve the community. It's a 40,000 square foot facility located at 4440 East Tropicana that is going to house two of our capstone programs, BizTown, which is a simulated city for fifth graders who actually run the city. They have an elected mayor. They apply for these positions. Business in the community have sponsored to have businesses as storefronts. And then, of course, our finance park. This really is part of that financial literacy point that I'm trying to make and you're asking about, is that it allows for high school students to be an adult for a day. They get a persona. They get a credit score, what their job is, how much they make, and what it comes to after taxes for a monthly budget. And there are 24 financial categories of wants and needs. And at the end of the day, they will need to try to balance their budget by the end of the program. Both these programs are teacher-led in the classrooms. There's 12 lessons for each of these particular programs, BizTown and Finance Park. And what they do is they get them prepared for the Inspiration Center for these BizTown and Finance Park. Now, we currently serve about 20,000 students per year. And here's the exciting part. We are going to be able to serve 60,000 students here in Clark County each year once the facility opens and we're in full swing. The grand opening will be sometime in October, but we're going to run some pilot programs during this summer. So it's really exciting, a game changer, and we're really excited to see this open. And if people want to come and see it and come and get a tour of it, all they have to do is contact our office and we'd be more than happy to show them.
Awesome. Okay. So instead of just going to the schools, as we were talking about, now you're going to have your own building where some of the programs will take place in that building.
That is correct. Just two of our programs, BizTown and Finance Park. Still all our other courses like JA in a Day, that's kindergarten to fifth grade. And then our career series for middle school, junior high, is what they used to call it when I was back in the day. But those are the programs that will still be continued to be executed within the schools.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the programs are primarily volunteer run. So what kinds of opportunities are there for the community and supporters of Junior Achievement to get involved and help out somehow?
Well, there's many ways to participate and volunteer. And I would say to your listeners is that it's really going to take all of us in this community to really give their time to these young students, to give them your knowledge, to, you know, to share what you have learned over the years. Your finances are always a helpful part of what we do. We're going to have an increased operating budget as we move into our new facility. So we are looking for those who may want to contribute in an annual way to Junior Achievement. Businesses, they can be a storefront if they choose to be a storefront and be part of that program in BizTown. Or they can be a category in our finance park. And all they have to do is contact our office and we'd be happy to share that information with them.
Okay. Now, what if someone wants to volunteer to help with teaching one of the programs like the JA in a day?
They can go to our website and that's southernnevada.ja.org and click on the volunteer opportunities. And that way they can see the volunteer opportunities. There's a small little form that they have to fill out. Our office will reach out to them and assist them in placing them where they feel comfortable being a part of that.
Okay, cool. Now, how can people find out more about Junior Achievement or the new Inspiration Center and all the various programs that you have at Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada?
So one of the ways you can call us, and that number is 702-214-0500, or you can go to our website, that is southernnevada.ja.org. And that way you can see everything that we do and get more information. You'll see information about our Inspiration Center. You will also see information on our raffle that we have going on, which is the Golden Ticket. And that is another opportunity to win some fabulous prizes. And that's going to be held on June 27th at the Virgin Hotel.
Awesome. You got so many things going on. That's fantastic.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding to be able to see the impact we're making. And as I said earlier, it's not just about our staff here. It's about the business owners. It's about all the volunteers that have taken time out of their busy schedule to really influence and really be a part of what we can do to make a difference in Southern Nevada.
That's fantastic. Okay, so once again, the website to go to if you want to learn more about Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada, their new Inspiration Center, the various events that they have going on in the community, or find out how to get involved, southernnevada.ja.org is the website, southernnevada.ja.org, or give them a call, 702-214-0500. 702-214-0500. And we've been speaking today with Mel Collegian. He's the development manager for Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada. And Mel, I want to thank you so much for being here and updating us on what's going on at Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada, especially this brand new Inspiration Center that you're going to have opening up soon with some pilot programs happening over the summer. And it just sounds like, you know, the organization keeps growing and keeps making such a difference in the lives of kids in the community. And it's, of course, especially important for Financial Literacy Month. So I want to thank you so much for being here today and sharing your time with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Heather. We appreciate the opportunity. And thank you to the listeners for being, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to meet them all.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the NIAA, are the 48,000 high school sports and performing arts students in Nevada. And so, we stand. We stand for the runners, debate team members, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, officials, and adjudicators. We stand for the drummers, football players, and actors. We stand for the golfers, singers, and swimmers. We stand as the national leader and advocate for these essential activities and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Abigail Zapote, Senior Advisor to the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration, or SSA. The SSA is continuing its Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, campaign to reach people in underserved cities and communities in the U.S. where SSI applications declined during and right after the pandemic. Abigail, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Heather. Thank you so much. So happy to be back with you to talk about the Supplemental Security Income Program.
Yeah. So for those who aren't familiar with it, what exactly is Supplemental Security Income?
Sure. So, you know, most folks are familiar with the Social Security Administration's retirement program, right? But we also administer the Supplemental Security Income Program, which provides monthly payments to adults and children with a disability or blindness who have income and resources below specific financial limits. So we're happy to be here to share more information about how folks can get access to payments for basic needs like shelter, food, clothing, and medicine through this program.
Okay, so it's not specifically for retirees, but how is it related to the Social Security retirement program?
Sure. So one of the ways is actually that, you know, if folks are currently receiving retirement benefits, but they are still receiving payments that leave them under the federal poverty line, they can actually also get access to SSI. So this is for folks that are 65 and older without disabilities who meet the financial qualifications. However, if folks, you know, have a friend, have a family member who is an adult or with a disability or have children with a disability or blindness, they could be eligible for SSI, again, to help pay for these basic needs like shelter, food, clothing, and medicine through our program. Folks can either reach us at the 1-800-772-1213 line, or they can visit www.ssa.gov/SSI for more information, and they can actually start the application process online as well.
Nice. Okay. So retirees who are already receiving Social Security benefits, but it's not enough to meet their needs, or people who have a disability or blindness who are not retired may be eligible for SSI.
Exactly right.
Okay. Now, you started an outreach campaign last summer, and we spoke about that. What have the results been since then?
Yeah, you know, we're really excited to share that through that campaign, we received over 1.7 million applications. However, that doesn't mean that our job is done. We know that there are still folks that are eligible for this program, could receive this benefit to help them through their day-to-day. So we're still reaching out to folks across the country through radio, through publications, through digital ads. So if folks are hearing us today, if they're seeing some of these ads in their neighborhood, on their social media, that means that we're reaching out to them. And again, even if they are not eligible for SSI, we want them to share this information with friends, family, colleagues who might need this additional support. We know that it's really hard for folks to ask for the support, but just sharing our phone number, 1-800-772-1213, folks can give us a call, get their appointment at a field office, and we at the field office can help them fill out the application. So we do ask that folks take that route. Again, please share this information with their loved ones because we know how much this could help folks with their day-to-day finances.
Okay. So obviously they can find out if they're eligible if they call or if they submit an application. But before doing that, what are the criteria that people can kind of use as a guideline? So you mentioned blindness or disability. What else needs to be in place in order to potentially be eligible for SSI payments?
Sure. So a good gauger that we give for folks is that if they're currently receiving SNAP benefits or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, they could be eligible for SSI. And additionally, if folks are receiving Medicaid, they could also be eligible for SSI. And I think that's a really great gauger for folks. If, again, if they're receiving SNAP benefits, if they're receiving Medicaid, they could receive SSI. And that's a really great way and information for them to bring to their appointment, as that can make that appointment process a bit easier for them as well.
Okay. How does your current SSI campaign support President Biden's efforts?
That's a great question. So as part of Executive Order 14091 on providing additional support to underserved populations through the government, our agency, the Social Security Administration, has created this additional stakeholder engagement, this campaign to make sure that we're reaching communities across the country. So these communities that are the most underserved, that means that populations that are living under the federal poverty threshold, as well as communities who might not know about the eligibility requirements for SSI because they might speak a language other than English. So we're providing this information in languages other than English and in Spanish as well, because we know that there are other folks who might need the support. We have this information for Polish communities, Ukrainian communities, Italian communities, Haitian communities, Cuban communities, et cetera. So we ask that even if you speak a language other than English, please give us a call at 1-800-772-1213, ask for interpreter services, and we can get you that interpreter on the phone and at your appointment when you come into the field office to finish out that application. We want to ensure that we're meeting the goals of the federal government to provide that additional support to communities who need it the most.
Okay. When you're talking about interpreter services, how many languages are available?
Yes, that's a great question. We have over 200 languages available. Folks can go to ssa.gov, and at the bottom, we have a multi-language microsite within our site, and folks can see all of the languages that we have available. But even if they don't have access to the internet, they can give us a call at 1-800-772-1213. And we have a service where folks can just share what language they want to have that interpretation in, and we can provide that for them. So again, the easiest way is to give us a call, or another great way is to utilize our SSI Protective Filing Tool. It's available at www.ssa.gov/SSI/start. And this tool allows people to request an appointment and preserve their date of filing for SSI. Using the tool takes less than 10 minutes. And in that process, as they're getting ready to request that appointment, they can request the interpreter that they need to help them fill out the application at the field office when they come in for their appointment.
Okay, awesome. So we're focusing on underserved communities because they have lack of access to the information. What other types of challenges do underserved communities face?
So there are a couple of different things that we've seen, especially during and after the pandemic. We know that folks might not have access to a computer or the internet, which is why we want to make that 1-800 number widely known. So again, 1-800-772-1213. We also know that folks might not have access to transportation. Sometimes our field offices can be further away from communities. So that's why we'd like to share our online site at www.ssa.gov/SSI. We also know that for folks to make an appointment, sometimes they have to take time off of work. Sometimes they don't have, you know, paid leave to be able to go through this process. But that's why this benefit is so important. If they need that additional support to make ends meet and they meet the income limitations for this program, we do think that it's great for them to, even if they have a doubt, to go ahead and give us a call or find us online to start that application process today so that they can have that little additional support for food, shelter, clothing, and medicine. But ultimately, you know, we know that these different barriers can compound and make it difficult for people to reach us. So again, this is why we're having this campaign to make sure that folks far and wide can get to know a little bit more about the agency, about this program. And ultimately, even if they are not eligible, we want folks to share this information with their loved ones, with their friends, with their colleagues, or, you know, folks that they might see in their community. Share this information because it might be that nudge that they need to be able to reach out to get the support.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so once again, the website is ssa.gov/SSI. That's Social Security Administration, and then the SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income, ssa.gov/SSI. Now, the SSI program is available to retirees who are already on Social Security or anyone who's not retired from child through adulthood, who is disabled, who is blind, who is already receiving other benefits like SNAP, like Medicaid. you may be eligible, or you might know friends, neighbors, family, loved ones who are eligible. So have them go to ssa.gov/SSI to start the process, or call 1-800-772-1213, 1-800-772-1213. And we've been speaking today with Abigail Zapote. She's a senior advisor to the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. And Abigail, it's been great talking to you today, finding out more about this program and how we can help spread the word to people who need the benefits. So I really want to thank you for your time here today. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for having me on today.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This weekend, Odyssey celebrates Earth Day. Hi, I'm Corey Crockett. All weekend, people nationwide will volunteer their time, energy, and resources to make a difference in their own communities, picking up trash, planting trees, cleaning our beaches. But it's not just something that starts and ends with this one weekend. Odyssey's Karina Delgado, based at 94.7 The Drive in D.C., helms our conversation today with the Nature Conservancy. She's joined by CEO Jennifer Morris and Program Coordinator Morgan Foster. Morgan actually joined the organization after taking part in one of their youth programs. Now, youth outreach has become a huge priority for the Nature Conservancy. In fact, this year, they're focused on supporting the next generation of changemakers who are demanding a better future for our planet and leading the way, and celebrating emerging leaders working across the globe to build a better future. Jennifer and Morgan join Karina to talk about conservation of and investment in nature and how it might be a forgotten piece when we talk about the fight against climate change. And it goes hand in hand with one thing, Odyssey's commitment to sustainability. We believe that if everyone just did one thing to make a difference in their communities to help the environment, together that's millions of things. All right, let's check in now with Karina in the nation's capital.
It's Karina Delgado on Earth Day. Hard to believe that it's already come back around again. And of course, we are here with two wonderful women today speaking about how to change this world, not just this year, but for the years to come. Jennifer, please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Morris, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Nature Conservancy.
And Morgan?
Hi, everyone. My name is Morgan Foster. I'm the program coordinator for the Impact Finance and Markets Division and the program coordinator for the Supporting Oyster Aquaculture and Restoration Team.
First, let's talk about the Nature Conservancy. For those of our audience who are unfamiliar, can you please tell us a little bit about the organization?
Of course. So the Nature Conservancy is actually the world's largest environmental organization. We have field operations in every single U.S. state, as well as in 77 countries around the world.
Wow.
And we're really dedicated to two primary things. One is to help improve the plight of nature around the world, or what we call the biodiversity crisis, as well as to combat climate change. And we do that through deep relationships in local communities and all of those places, as well as working with companies and, of course, governments.
It actually is something that is very urgent. And at one point, I speak for my generation, which is Generation X, it perhaps didn't feel that way. But these days, it's definitely a conversation that is going to require all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely critical. And, you know, that's why it's so important to engage youth as well in the movement. And we, as the Nature Conservancy, have over 6,000 staff in all these places around the world. But you're so right. The urgency is now, both on climate change, which of course we hear about on a daily basis, but, you know, often people forget that nature is also in crisis. Mm-hmm. We have lost so many species around the world, and we are working very hard as the Nature Conservancy and so many partners to actually change that trajectory, to try to restore ecosystems and to preserve the ones that we have around the world that still maintain high levels of biodiversity.
Speak a little more, please, to conservation and not only what that means to you, but
to us as audience members and why it's important.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we think about conserving nature, we often think about, you know, sort of species far away from our urban environments. And actually, preserving nature is about all of us humans. If we lose access to watersheds, if we lose access to pollinators for food crops, it's going to be much more difficult for humans to survive on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. So nature really is about all of us. And what the Nature Conservancy does, as well as many of our partners around the world, is really try to change the conversation of thinking of nature as far away in some remote location, but really it's here. From from how hot it is in cities, we need to be planting more trees to reduce that heat, from ensuring that our watersheds are healthy so that we have the water that we need for drinking water and for agriculture, which of course is the largest user of water around the world. About 70% of our water actually goes into growing food and food production around the world. So ecosystem protection, preserving nature, is not just about biodiversity in nature itself, but really about protecting us.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because of course, as you said, you talk about eco protection and everybody immediately thinks the rainforests, and you know, you have this idea of the Amazon in your mind. But in truth, when you speak to agriculture, that also greatly impacts the supply chain, where we're getting our food, sustainable sources, and as you said, pollinating the food with making sure that the insects are okay so that agriculture continues. And so I'm so glad that we're having that conversation today. And oh, by the way, not to mention these oysters. Okay, I'm taking the pin back out. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yes, so I work for the Supporting Oyster Aquaculture or Restoration Team, SOAR, as it's known. We do love a good acronym. And this program was started back when the pandemic was going on as a way to purchase oysters from farmers. Restaurants had closed. They needed an additional revenue stream. And these oysters were used for restoration projects. And so a lot of these farmers didn't have the opportunity to do restoration projects in the past. But now that we've kind of had a few iterations, they've been really excited about this and have indicated that that's something that they're really interested in. And now SOAR is transitioning to be more mindful of the aquaculture industry as a whole. So something that we're thinking about going forward is, how can we make sure that this industry is diverse and is set up to be able to, you know, stand up against the climate change threats that are really impacting that industry?
How did you get into this field?
So I went to the University of Virginia, and while I was there, I had an opportunity to do my senior thesis about coastal erosion in Wachapreek, Virginia, which is on the little like coast peninsula. And it was a really amazing opportunity. I was very hands-on, getting to go out in the field, looking at oysters that were being used to protect against wave erosion. And so that really fostered my general interest in being able to work with this part of aquaculture and this kind of form of erosion control.
And before working in aquaculture, have you always had an interest in conservation?
I have. My parents will know this story quite well. When I was younger, we were learning about the three R's in elementary school: reduce, reuse, and recycle. And I immediately went home and I was like, "Mom and Dad, we have to get our recycling bin out from under the deck. We have to start now." And it was a very kind of moment of, we can have an impact as individuals, which I think is extremely important for folks to be able to get involved in the conservation space, you know, wherever they are and wherever they are in their conservation journey.
You know, when I was in school, it was reading, writing, arithmetic. Do you remember that?
Yes, exactly. I love that we've evolved our three R's, right?
Yes. And what about you, Jennifer? How did you get into conservation?
So my journey actually started when I was a volunteer in northern Namibia, in southwest part of Africa. And I went there really thinking that I was going to go into public health. This is 2 years after I graduated from college. Mm. And I got there and quickly realized that so many of the health problems, I was working with women. I was a volunteer working on a women's project there. And so many of the issues there were actually really more upstream. So the lack of access to fresh water were causing a lot of diseases, and wow, drinking brackish water that had, you know, wasn't good for people to be drinking. Mm-hmm. The fact that many of the former agricultural production was becoming much more difficult to grow because of increasing droughts in this area. And so I sort of had quite a few aha moments while I was there thinking, you know, instead of focusing on the impacts of a deteriorating local ecosystem, I wanted to focus on nature protection and climate mm-hmm. change issues a little bit more upstream to help prevent some of the diseases that I was seeing in my village and particularly impacting women and children. So I changed my career path then and wow. there and decided to focus on economic development at the time, really focused on women in Africa and then kind of made an interesting career shift into conservation and never looked back. And I've been doing this now for 27 years and think it's really the most important work that we're doing now is to help prevent the tragedies that we're seeing on a daily basis that mm-hmm. are becoming increasingly challenging as we see the freight train of climate change really upon us. And that's why I love the work that Morgan is doing at the Nature Conservancy and so many other programs that involve youth because I don't think we should, you know, we often say like youth is the future and it's up to the youth. We're doing it for the youth. Yes, but it's up to us to do something now. Mm-hmm. We can't just kick the can down the road and expect Morgan's generation to be able to solve all these problems, but involving Morgan and others like her now to actually roll up their sleeves and understand these big challenges and then help them have the tools to go back to their own communities as well as to help other communities is the most important work in the world. So Morgan, thank you for everything you're doing for the Nature Conservancy and the things that you're going to do in the future for your career.
You know, it's so interesting that it's actually almost in the lens that your interest in health and humanitarian efforts was a realization that these issues are a byproduct of an eroding environment, and to make that pivot in order to create some prevention is almost the same for any health conversation. It's that prevention, a pound of prevention is worth an ounce of cure, and the same can be said for the health of this planet.
Absolutely. No, you said that so well. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing constantly is that, you know, so many parts of our planet right now are in the emergency room. You know, mm-hmm. we're just focusing on how do we address.
Triage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do we address? I mean, so much of the migration that we're seeing into the U.S. as well as around the world is because of an inability to actually grow food and mm-hmm. an inability for rural communities in particular to have the same livelihoods that their parents had. So they need to find a better place. And if we're able as a global community to actually address the upstream topics, whether it's, you know, helping with more restoration, helping to actually reduce the amount of global emissions we have very quickly in the path that we need to do and accelerate. And, you know, of course, we all signed up to Paris, but we're not moving fast enough on mm-hmm. that global emissions trajectory downward. So that is causing us all to think like triage doctors. Mm-hmm. And what we are trying to do at TNC, as well as many of our partners, is to say, yes, but we need to continue to be mitigating, to be able to be reducing the future impacts that we're going to have. And that includes nature. Often people don't think of nature when they think of the climate crisis. They think, of course, of, you know, reducing our reliance on fossil fuels, and that's absolutely critical. But we also need to remember that 30% of the solution to the climate crisis is actually in how we produce our food and mm-hmm. how we treat our forests and how we treat our oceans. So we often call that the forgotten solution. It's absolutely critical that we're investing in nature protection because it's not only good for climate, but it's of course good for those pollinators and watershed services that we spoke about earlier. It's absolutely essential. With $1 going to nature protection, you can actually achieve so many more things than only working on the energy transition, which is happening. It needs to happen faster, but don't forget nature.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of those activations, what are some things that our audience members can do immediately in their lives to start to make that change out of the emergency room onto the ward and into a healthy place as a planet?
I think that making space for folks to get involved is probably most crucial. I live here in Washington, D.C., and one of my favorite things that I got to do last year was work at our community garden. It was an opportunity to not only, you know, be able to be out and be in nature and be able to grow food, but we were also being able to provide fresh food and vegetables for folks that are living in the area that might not otherwise have access to that. And I think that was a true moment of like making space for the individual to get involved wherever they are. You know, I do live in a big city, and so sometimes it is hard to get that connection to nature and be able to see, you know, that this is, you know, impactful. And so I think that opportunities like that are extremely important for folks that want to get involved on the individual scale.
Sure. And Jennifer, if you could recommend one thing, what would that be?
Yeah, well, my one thing this year, I have to say, is to get out and vote. Mm. And vote for the people that, you know, share your values, that are going to support nature conservation, they're going to support our pathway to ensure a better sustainable future for ourselves and our children. And, you know, we know that millions of people this year, there's so many elections around the world in democracies that have the opportunity to vote. And yet around us here in Washington, D.C., I hear so much apathy and wonder how many people Morgan's age are going to be out there and voting. And apathy is the worst thing right now. We cannot be sitting back and not voting. It is up to all of us. We have this power every 2 to 4 years, depending on what election your cycle you're on, to go out there and choose the leaders that will represent us in the future we all want to have. So my one thing is definitely go vote.
Wonderful. And for those who are looking for other one things that they can do, you could always log on at odyssey.com, odyssey.com/one thing. Ladies, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
We see the urgent threat of climate change every day. Tornadoes in Texas, drought in Europe, typhoons in the Philippines. But what don't we see? How the climate crisis hits vulnerable people the hardest, women and girls. That's why CARE helps the world's most marginalized people build resiliency and fight for a more just and sustainable world. You can help. Learn more at care.org/climate.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Habitat for Humanity Las Vegas is hosting their fourth annual Putt for Homes Golf Tournament this Monday, April 22nd, with an 8 a.m. shotgun start at the Red Rock Country Club Mountain Course. Find out more or register to play at lasvegashabitat.org. That's lasvegashabitat.org. The nonprofit Signs of Hope, which stands for Healing, Options, Prevention, and Education, is marking their 50th anniversary with a Denim Day Gala on Wednesday, April 24th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Circa Resort and Casino. Wear your denim in support of sexual assault survivors for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, with the important message that it doesn't matter what a victim is wearing, because there's no excuse for sexual assault. Find out more or get your tickets at SOHLV.org. That stands for Signs of Hope Las Vegas, SOHLV.org. The 9th Annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival, put on by the Nevada Preservation Foundation, is happening April 25th to 28th, with over 40 events including tours, educational sessions, and a Saturday night 70s-themed cocktail gala. Find out more at nevadapreservation.org. That's nevadapreservation.org. The 13th Annual Las Vegas Science and Technology Festival, presented by the Las Vegas Natural History Museum in collaboration with the Clark County School District, returns for 9 days of community STEM exploration from April 26th to May 4th. The week-long event wraps up with the Giant Science and Technology Expo on Saturday, May 4th at the Expo at World Market Center. For the full lineup of free events and activities, visit scifest.vegas. That's scifest.vegas. Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their 22nd annual Walk for Wishes fundraising event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 27th, with 8 a.m. registration and the walk and run starting at 8:30 a.m. at Town Square. World Wish Day is the anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of Make-A-Wish back in 1980. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/walk. That's wish.org/snv/walk. Aid for AIDS of Nevada, or AFAN, is celebrating their 40th anniversary and hosting the 34th annual AIDS Walk Las Vegas on Sunday, April 28th at 9 a.m. at Las Vegas Ballpark. Penn and Teller return as grand marshals, and dogs are welcome with a signed pet waiver. Register for the event or find out more at afanlv.org. That's afanlv.org. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, May 6th at 8 p.m. benefiting Shine a Light, and Monday, May 20th at 8 p.m. benefiting Angels of Las Vegas. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is holding their 2024 Homecoming Gala, Celebrate the Journey Home, on Thursday, May 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. atop World Market Center at Worldview. Guests are encouraged to wear their best homecoming attire. Get tickets or find out more at nphy.org. That's nphy.org. And American Off-Road Customs and the Vegas Valley Four Wheelers Club are partnering to host the Barricade Go Topless Jeep charity event on Saturday, May 18th, starting at 9 a.m. in the lot at Patrick Lane and Dean Martin Drive. The event will raise money for four charities: the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Foundation, Race to Erase 22, Las Vegas Pet Rescue, and the Collaboration Center Foundation. Find out more or register to attend at the Go Topless LV Facebook page. So go to Facebook and type in Go Topless LV.